Welcome, everyone. This is the LaRue Show. It's Saturday, August 15th, 2009. My name is Marcia Mary Baker, and our topic for this week's show is Mr. President, the mass strike is on. Obama's controllers aren't happy. They ain't happy at all. And to discuss this today, we have three guests. I'm very glad to welcome two who are right out there in the Midwest and in Texas, in the thick of all the action. So speaking to us from the Chicago LPAC office, Tiffany Walmsley. Welcome, Tiffany.
Thanks.
And Tiffany, as I said, she's in Chicago. Yesterday she was in Detroit. She has an overview of all the Great Lakes states in the midst of this hot situation with the congressional and other town hall meetings of all kinds. And likewise, in Texas, speaking to us from Galveston, Texas, at an event he can say more about, but we welcome Ian Overton. Welcome, Ian.
Hi, Marcia. How you doing?
Good. And he's based usually in the Houston area, but likewise getting all over the place. And here in the studio, we are very glad to have welcome Anton Chaykin. Welcome, Tony.
Hi, Marcia.
As you know, from the history counterintelligence section at large of EIR, and that's involved a lot of dishing the dirt on the, we mentioned the controllers of Obama that are now in big trouble. And let me just introduce make one announcement and introduce very briefly the topic. The announcement is, as many of you know, that September 8th, which is actually Mr. LaRouche's birthday, is the next international webcast at which he will speak. It will be at 1 p.m. that day, September 8th. You know it's on the LaRouchePAC.com website. It's definite, as I say, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. And a few hours ago, speaking with associates, Mr. LaRouche was reviewing this situation, and one way you can put it is the war has just begun and we've won the ground for a key battle. And what we want to understand about this, in fact, is it's a personal victory for Mr. LaRouche in the global war, because and Tony Chaykin we won't reminisce on the air, but going back to around 1971, 1972, for various reasons, there has been a major effort to put LaRouche in a box, keep the devil in the bottle, but he is out. It's internationally. It's a personal victory against the British Empire, against the Imperial forces. You have a lot of the agentry, the controllers around President Obama, and Obama himself, who's gone along with all this, is in a meltdown. I'll just mention this morning on his weekly radio show, he again was fixatedly motivating or discussing that there's too many myths against his health care reform package, like the death panel and so forth. But back to the battle as a whole, and the perspective on that is that for 38 years, since 35 to 40 years, the enemy has staked a lot of their operations on figuring that they could suppress ideas, suppress Mr. LaRouche and his ideas, and this is busted up. This is not true. That's what we're seeing breaking out here. And so if we don't lose our nerve, let me put it in the negative. In other words, keep our nerve, go for the flank, and remember that the greatest flanking success lies in figuring out the mind of the enemy and how to screw it up, play on that, right? And you'll remember that it was April 11th at a webcast where Mr. LaRouche took the strategic step of pointing out the personality characteristic of Mr. Obama, the narcissism, the look at me factor that made him go along with these complete with the British Empire plans for the genocidal health care in particular, but also the entire financial bailout, everything else. And LaRouche put the Hitler mustache on the image. That was several months ago, and now you see it literally all around the world. And it's not just a question of something catching on, But really what we're seeing around the country, which now our guests are going to talk about and bring out certain points, is that this Obama-British Empire action to impose this Hitler healthcare program in the United States has triggered a mass reaction against overall the entire economic collapse and everything else that government has been involved in imposing, the Obama administration and so forth. So I'll just say that the LaRouche Political Action Committee, where our organizers Tiffany and Ian are going to say something right at the beginning, has just put out a hard copy pamphlet, but you can see this on the LaRouchePAC.com website, of that's titled, The People of the United States No Longer Accept Their President or Congress. And about 110,000 hard copy pieces of that has been printed centrally. It's from the August 1st, 2009 international webcast by Mr. LaRouche. And that's what you're seeing, I think. Republicans, Democrats, independents, know-nothings, everyone showing up around the country, not just at healthcare congressional town hall meetings, but any old kind of meeting. And about, we're close to 400,000 copies of the pamphlet on Act Now to Stop the Nazi Healthcare Program that many people know. So I just say, keep that in mind to contribute resources and so forth. Now is the critical time. It's our time. It's a lot of fun, but a lot of trouble. I don't mean trouble. It's a lot of danger, but that's because the potential for turning away from this doomsday course of history into a development, into a civilization advance direction is really at hand. So let me just then point out to people that Ian Overton is kindly speaking to us in Galveston in a very big venue because he's at a hot event and he may have to leave it. It's already underway, I think, Ian. You can say more about it or not, but why don't you open up with your direct involvement in what's been going on in Texas and draw out the key points about that. Go ahead, Ian.
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean the important thing to notice is that the population as a whole is, I mean, they're using the occasion of the town hall meeting to really come out, and they want to let people know that they don't want these reforms. They don't want what Obama's pushing. They don't accept what the congressmen are telling them, and it's happening to Democrats and Republicans.
And you've been at both personally. Is that Sheila Jackson Lee and other people? Is that right in Houston?
Well, yeah. The Congress, Sheila Jackson Lee, she had some town hall meetings.
Okay.
Gene Green. Ted Poe is a Republican. He canceled his own town hall. He wasn't even showing up to his own town hall meeting. And also, you had some from the Tea Party group. They were having their own town hall on health care.
Mm-hmm.
And at all of these events, even, the supposed opposition event by the Tea Party, it was all, well, we're just going to tell you what we think about the bill. And everyone came there to say, well, we don't want to hear that. We already know the bill's terrible. Tell us what you're going to do to stop the bill, or we're here to make you stop the bill. And so in these town hall meetings, you're finding that no one who's organizing their meetings is able to quell the rage in the population.
Right.
They're just unable to do it. And so what they're saying is, well, what are we going to do? And so we're there, and we're telling them, well, look, you got to look beyond the matter of health care on its own, and you got to go to the economic question. And we've been intervening on that level, and it's actually been getting a lot of response from the people, and it's also creating quite a stir in the media. Everyone's starting to see that they can't keep LaRouche in the black box anymore.
You mean you've had coverage or you've had interviews and that kind of thing? Do you want to? Is that?
Yeah. I mean, for example, at Sheila Jackson Lee's town hall meeting a couple days ago, we took the poster that we have on the website, the the small 8.5 by 11 poster that says I've changed, and it has Obama's little mustache on there.
Mm-hmm.
And we were organizing at a town hall meeting that had a capacity of maybe 100 people, but 300 to 400 showed up, and people were very happy to wave that poster up in the air, and a number of newspapers, the Chronicle and other newspapers, the Examiner and so forth, I mean, they gave us lots of coverage because it was very clear. You know, LaRouche is the one who is out there giving these people something to escalate on, to really make the point about what they're thinking. And, I mean, especially the fact that, you know, when we are out there talking about, well, look, let's look beyond simply the healthcare, and let's look at the lack of jobs. Let's look at the states are bankrupt. Let's look at the fact that people just don't have anything. That's what's really getting people to respond in a way that's more than just outrage, just blindly.
Right. And let me ask you, Ian, you've been in several places, but I know that you might have been there at the time when the LaRouche Political Action Committee in Texas went town to town with the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act, and also the legislature was in session. It only is every 2 years, I understand, in Austin. So you have all of that potential coming together with now people up in arms for what's able to be done. Is that right?
Well, actually, I wasn't here when we were doing the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act campaign.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I was in D.C. and in California.
Okay.
But the response generally has been where now people have seen us doing all kinds of things. We're coming to all kinds of meetings. We're intersecting different political stratum of the population. And they're seeing that we're covering a whole range of situation. And that it's not that we're just saying, you know, go here and do this. Just be some cannon fodder. And we're also not advocating anything that would be contrary to the law, where in Texas some people...
You mean secession?
Yeah, right. There's a whole time to divorce the federal government movement. But what people are seeing is that we're providing an actual intellectual basis for leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually something that Lynn identified as long ago as the 1968 social unrest.
The Texas,
so people are actually flocking to us for that.
Mm-hmm. And people should know in advance, Ian may have to get off before the hour ends because of being at an event right now that's heating up. But Tiffany, you were saying, I know you've been at one town hall event that got publicized around the world, Representative Dingell. But let me ask you first, this business, as Ian said, of people showing up, whether it's held by, called by whatever topic, it doesn't have to be health care. That's the case with what you're saying about Representative Marsha Fudge, who replaced Representative Tubb Jones. Can you draw that out more? You're seeing just people turning out, right?
Yeah, what happened is we... not too long after the Dingell event in Romulus, Michigan, we went down to Cleveland, Ohio. I guess this was last week, maybe 3 days ago. Just this last week, I think Wednesday or Thursday. And this turned out to not even be a healthcare town hall as we originally thought. It was Congressman Fudge talking about the state of the state, or, you know, something to that effect. It was mostly an awards ceremony. There was nothing really going on except a bunch of people getting awards inside. But nonetheless, you had a lot of people out there. You had the people, the Tea Partiers out there. You had a whole sidewalk full of people. It's questionable if they were busting or if they were locals, but they all had the Obamacare signs and pro, you know, healthcare reform signs. And this was just a political event. It wasn't even a healthcare town hall. And then, of course, we were there with the Obama mustache sign, and there's already videos posted out on the blogs and whatnot. of our intervention to make the point of, you know, what the real political discussion needs to be, as it was at the Dingell Town Hall event, and I can talk more about that when you're ready.
Right. Well, just to add to everything you've said, because our listeners, I think one of the reasons they're participating, either by the telephone message line or naturally we're live, and we welcome any emails right now if you're participating live. But our listeners must know you can't turn on a television or see a headline somewhere. And it's the same around the world, as I say, in France, Germany, it's in Arabic. To see this famous image of the LPAC put out of Obama with a mustache saying, "I've changed." But even look at Iowa. Senator Grassley has said he's going to have about 20 town hall meetings. He's had about three. And the crowds are mobbing him out of disgust. Of course, he is one of the Republicans that said early on, "I'll buddy up with Max Baucus in Montana. Count on me." But now the population of Iowa is saying, "Forget it. Forget it. We don't want it. Don't do it." And a couple of days ago, Senator Grassley, the Republican, issued a news release saying, wanting to say that there should not be any end-of-life kind of provision of forced counseling so that care would be discontinued at your end-of-life period. So I just bring that out. But why don't you, Ian, one thing, you had said you're in a special part of the world. Texas is famous for all kinds of things. It has a history of, was it Aaron Burr trying to split it off? Is that right, Tony?
Well, nearby, yeah, Texas was in the same area, but Texas also supported FDR in
right.
the 1930s, and we can see that again today. We can take it out of the hands of the Confederacy.
Right, and also Representative Jim Wright, he had in mind the Nuapa plan for water for the South. There's a tradition. But, Ian, you were in stressing the intellectual leadership role that has to be played so that you don't go into a hopeless mob scene and Jacobinism. You've raised you're trying to deal with not having people fall into the easy all the traps of populism. Do you want to say something about that?
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, one thing you're finding is that there's a lot of people who are just organizing themselves to go to these town hall meetings. And, well, except for the people that the Democrats with Obama are bussing in, like whether from Acorn or whatever.
Is there a lot of that?
Oh, yeah. As a side note, at the second of Sheila Jackson Lee's town hall meetings, one of the reasons why most of the people were out in the foyer and couldn't hear what was going on is because Acorn people in their Acorn shirts were brought in the back door so they could fill up all the seats in the front.
Mm.
A lot of the people who wanted to speak were pushed out into the back. But, I mean, in terms of some of the population, I mean, they're going and doing their homework. They're looking at the bill. They're looking at other people in the population. And so people are just starting to just put out all kinds of things in whatever media format they can, whether it's their own personal blog or YouTube or forming groups on Google. But the problem is that a lot of the more political, institutional, party hacks types, the pundits and so forth, they are happy to seize upon a population and direct to this. And so what you find, especially with the conservatives and the Republicans and the people who might tend to associate themselves with a Tea Party, they are completely against the bill, but their solutions stink. And they'll talk about free markets and, you know, we have to go back to free markets because that's what the Constitution says. And, you know, we're going to stop Obama from becoming a socialist. Like, that's some kind of like, that's even what he's trying to do in the first place.
So the big
problem is that they know what they don't like, and they're very active, and then some of them are fairly articulate and saying why it's such a bad idea. But what they don't have is a sense of actually being a patriot more than just, you know, my first 10 amendments.
Right, liberty and prosperity, right? No, I'm just...
Well, you know, they're exercising free speech, and they want to defend themselves, and they see it as an oppressive government, and they support, you know, due process and all these other things. But in terms of having a sense of immortality, of organizing and creating something as a legacy for their children, all they're really saying is, well, we don't want to give our children this debt. We don't want to give our children Big Brother. So it's a negative campaign so far, and what people really need is a sense of something they can replace this with that will work. And that's where we come in.
And Tony's going to say something too, but I'll tell you, in this is definitive British Empire type intervention to use media and everything else to steer people into the lowest level non-think opposition, you know, against socialism, again, as what you're saying, right?
But Karl Rove, we've heard from excellent sources in the Congress. Karl Rove is going around frantic to the Republicans, saying to them, if you don't change the way this is going, Lyndon LaRouche is taking over this whole show, because he does he is giving this kind of leadership, and that's what they're worried about.
And their worries are confirmed. Do you want to, Ian, you break in any time in case you have to go, but otherwise I know Tiffany was going to, another lot of people saw internationally when Representative Dingell was confronted in Romulus. But Tiffany, do you want to describe what's going on in Michigan or at large or that meeting?
Yeah, sure. I mean, and we're going back and forth between Chicago and Detroit, so we're kind of seeing... getting to see from two different areas what the reactions are. And it's very similar. And in Romulus, it was really typified what was going on around the country where, you know, I'm surprised really the Dingell made it out of there alive, because, you know, this was still in the early part of the month when the town halls were just kicking off. So you did have, you know, the supposed supporters of Obama's reforms and supporters of Dingell at the front of the room, but there wasn't even that many of them. So the room, which fit about 200 people, was just jam-packed, you know, with people extremely upset, barely letting Dingell get a word in because every other thing he said was a lie or didn't address their concerns. But one thing that was interesting also is you saw people in the crowd who actually had a copy of the bill with highlighted sections and who would refute Dingell by citing the sections that contradicted what he was saying, like on the end-of-life care question on euthanasia. That question came up several times during the event, and, you know, we have video footage of a man who's saying, you know, it's section 1233. This is where you talk about it. And, you know, so you see that though what Ian is bringing up is true, where we do have the danger of a tendency of making this discussion smaller than what it actually is, you do also have a natural inclination in people to not accept, you know, any BS lines about what is being discussed in the Congress and who clearly are willing to take the leadership that we provide. You know, and one thing is, at that specific meeting on numerous occasions, and this has happened across the country as well, the people actually stood up for our right to be there and were very excited that we were there, taking our literature, asking for extra, you know, taking pictures of our signs to hold up. At that Romulus event, the entire crowd was cheering for us when we held up a 4x4 foot sign of the Obama mustache picture. The entire room was on their feet clapping and cheering. So, you know, they're definitely ready to move. And, you know, this is why, of course, we need the support of people by becoming memberships and helping finance our campaign to organize as much as possible and reach as many people as possible with LaRouche's policies as a means for addressing the general breakdown we're facing.
Thanks. And also, let me interject just to what you just said, Tiffany, to thank Donald up in Montana. I don't know if he's on live on it. He was the one that got material out yesterday when Obama spoke at the airplane hangar in Belgrade in Bozeman, and sure enough, there was the LaRouche Political Action Committee out organizing everywhere, getting out tons of material, everything possible. And it is true. It's not just that we're physically everywhere, but Lynn is absolutely, after all these decades, it's breakout for Mr. LaRouche and for the entire movement, and especially the LPAC and the LaRouche Youth Movement. I heard also discussions, you've got campuses opening up in 3 weeks, and this isn't the same old of just the fall season or something like that. This is just what you're saying, Tiffany, about organizing, you know what I mean, having the maximum outreach to people and then engaging them. Ian, do you want to add any more about any particular, you've been at all the town hall meetings and other kinds of things like that. I think you have a whole grouping coming up next week. Is that right? I mean, they're going to continue.
Oh, yeah. There's town hall meetings in Houston. There's in Dallas. They're having them all over the place. Right now we're at Ron Paul's birthday barbecue town hall meeting. And
are there a lot of people there?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's maybe about 1,000. They charge $20 the door because they're raising funds to rebuild Galveston since it still hasn't been.
Oh yeah.
totally rebuilt since
the hurricane.
A couple of years ago. But you know, one thing that I think is just really important for people in the population who are really following our leadership and are going to these events and they're trying to organize is just to get a sense of just how stupid the Congress and the leadership in the White House think we are as people. Mm-hmm. Because, and this gets at what LaRouche is talking about when he brings up the difference between a type A personality and a type B personality, where the type A is the one that where they believe in their senses, and this is what the Congress is treating you like, where you know, they think, well, if I just talk to them in a nice, calm voice, and I just say, well, look, it's not that bad. Don't worry. The things that you're hearing, those are just scary dreams. Go back to sleep. Go be fine. This is the way that the congressmen are talking to people. And you can see it in their YouTube videos. You can see it on the fact-checked videos on the White House. They have this very calm, very soothing, you know, mother talking to her four-year-old that woke up from a nightmare. and if you contrast that with what LaRouche calls the type B personality, where a person is looking for the paradoxes between what their senses tell them, what they see and what they hear, and they're actually trying to figure out what's true, and they're trying to look for a necessary cause to the phenomena that they're seeing, instead of just taking it as self-evident. The more the population does its research and looks and investigates thoroughly what LaRouche is talking about, the more that they're going to realize that these people, when they're just giving you this garbage at these town hall meetings, these congressmen just giving you this garbage, the more that they're not even just going to be enraged at them, the more that they're going to actually be explicit and telling the congressmen exactly what it is that they're doing and really just holding them even more accountable to that sort of thing. And that's how we're really going to save our country, developing that sense of identity in the organic leadership of the population at large.
Right. I just we have Tony Chaikin here, and we have some important things I'd like him to recap. But just to point out what you said, Ian, that occurred this week, when you had BBC itself call up LaRouche's spokeswoman, Deborah Freeman, you often see her on the webcasts moderating, and ask her about, wanted her comments about the thinking that if she's drawn out about admitting that Mr. LaRouche was associated with the Obama mustache and all this kind of thing. And Deborah Freeman went very specifically into the Tony Blair Agency, NICE, National Institutes for Health and Clinical Excellence, in 1999, what it's done, how it's drawn up the death rate. So the BBC woman reporters started to go into meltdown. Debbie was going into actual truth instead of being anti-socialist or anti-net. So I think that bears on just what you're saying. The more the population does its research, the more the truth is out there, the more the differentiated truth, not plain old information, but strategic truth. This is very powerful. It's very powerful. So Tony Chaikin has been involved in a truth squad here in Washington as well as in print, especially he's the nemesis of the man now known as Easy Kill Emanuel, who is the top gun at the White House for health care reform. And these people, I mean, their power is broken. But Tony, do you want to recap some of what we're up against here and what has and hasn't got? I mean, the one thing is that his name, more about him, has got out. But I just want everyone to know that there's a sketch of the actual quotes of his, Tony can say from where, in the latest pamphlet by LPAC, which is from the August 1st webcast, the people of the United States no longer accept their president or Congress. But okay, Emanuel, Tony.
So how did we get on this? Because it was LaRouche and his staff that pulled out the evidence to show what we're confronted with, and we sparked and organized this entire revolt from the beginning. It started with LaRouche going directly at Obama's mentality as a Nero narcissist, and how dangerous this was. And in the spring, Time magazine had a little article about a group of so-called behavioral economists directing every step of the Obama program. This tipped us off, and we went directly to Larry Summers, Peter Orszag, the other of these Nazi economists, and soon got onto their major program, which was the healthcare reform as euthanasia. And we dug out the quotes that have buried them in their own Nazism since that time, especially this guy, Ezekiel Emanuel. The interesting thing is the psychology, as Ian was pointing out here. What is the psychology of people who have already, you know, they've already seen or have available to them these quotes that are where Ezekiel Emanuel is saying, for example, you should kill a 2-month-old baby instead of a 20-year-old. You should kill elderly people. You should kill people with dementia. And, you know, this is from a whole lifetime of his work. Why would they still stick with Obama? There is a portion of the population that still would, not people just being paid to do so by, like Acorn. In the face of Obama himself lying day after day, like when he says, death panels? Well, and then he doesn't talk about the death panels that he is himself proposing, what he calls IMAC on steroids. He is proposing literally a government board that he's trying to force into this health bill in Congress. And then he won't talk about the board. He'll talk about the counseling, death counseling section of the bill, which is another issue that itself comes directly out of the euthanasia society, as we've recently discovered, as has been pointed out. But the fact is that people who are somewhat clued in to this conflict and still get enraged at LaRouche and at what we're doing for attacking Obama on this support euthanasia. That is the ugly truth about sections of the American population. You'll find this if you scratch the surface of somebody who says Obama is right. They support the killing of the elderly. They support this whole program. And we've seen since the end of World War II, after the Nazis like Karl Brandt were convicted of euthanasia crimes at Nuremberg, there was there has been since the 1960s in particular, since the era of the 68ers, there has been a deliberate promotion of euthanasia, living wills, the right to die, and this has been done by
scarce resources,
but this was done directly by the old euthanasia and eugenics movements coming out of Britain. In Britain, there was an organization called the Voluntary Euthanasia Society, and they created, along with other sections of, like the Eugenics Society in the United States and in Britain, all of it with a British mother, they created a new euthanasia movement precisely the same as the one that they put into Germany to promote what Hitler took up in 1939 as his euthanasia. You can get a very concrete timeline for this. In 1969, the Voluntary Euthanasia Society created in the United States what they called the Living Will. That same year, where this is so-called advanced directives, where you agree to allow them to pull the plug if it comes to a crisis in your life. That same year, 1969, the Eugenics Society and the Population Council of Rockefeller set up a euthanasia propaganda group called the Hastings Center. And this center has today Ezekiel Emanuel as a fellow. In 1980, the Voluntary Euthanasia Society of England sent the London Times reporter Derek Humphrey to the United States to found the Hemlock Society. That Hemlock Society and the voluntary euthanasia people have crafted this section 1233 that is in the Obama bill on end-of-life counseling. And they have later on. You have things like 1994, George Soros, the Project on Death in America. One of the biggest participants in that was Ezekiel Emanuel's wife, who developed a whole program with Soros fellows, people paid by Soros, to brainwash doctors in the American Medical Association to go along with a culture of death to. Agree that we have limited resources. We have to start to think about getting rid of the elderly, get them out of the way. So hammering on people, many of the people listening to this may have not thought this through, that they have accepted this propaganda from Nazis, from a British Empire base that has tried to convince the American public to give up the idea of the sanctity of human life and accept a kind of end of civilization point of view. That's really what it is. That's what's in the Living Wills. Ezekiel Emanuel himself, in 1988, crafted as a graduate student one of the most celebrated forms of this Living Will, his own Emanuel directive out of Harvard University. So this is what we're confronted with. If you scratch a supporter of Barack Obama today, you're gonna hit a swastika right below the skin, and that's the problem. And this is where it comes from.
Well, certainly the context is this filthy intervention, this evil genocidal intervention, is the degraded physical economy and demoralization and pessimism. Let me ask you, Tiffany, at large, in Michigan, where you have 20, I'm sure you have a third of everyone unemployed, but 20% almost officially unemployed. What do you want to say about the general reaction on, the economy at large? You described how everyone in the room was applauding at Dingell's Romulus meeting, the representative Dingell's, when they all had a gut sense of the fight that you were representing by showing the mustache on Obama. But what do you want to say more about this people on the economy being open to the whole history or new ideas or the fact something can be done?
Yeah, well, people recognize that, you know, this area used to be the creative center of the world at a certain point. You know, the latest technologies in machine tooling, in retooling machine plants, largely came out of and were immediately put into effect in this area. And, you know, unfortunately, the poverty there, it's very unique because it's very old. It goes back several decades. So, you know, there is a certain amount of demoralization, but I think by reminding people of the fact that this was once one of the most productive and creative sectors on the planet, the fact that we still have the opportunity to retool these industries and to bring these workers who may have, you know, left their communities back with the prospects of rebuilding this part of the country and the rest of the country as well, that people are responding to that. And, you know, at this point, it's kind of like people can't even really support themselves. They have no means of continuing to function on a daily basis at this point. And they're just ready to move. You know, you go out on the streets with a table to organize politically, and it's beyond the question of people saying, you know, yeah, okay, you're right, but, you know, what can we really do? We can't do anything. You have a lot more people now who are saying, you know, send me to Washington. I'll march. We should have a million-man march. We should do this. I'll get on a bus. I'll go to Washington. I'll call them. I was there. You know, I was at the town hall. Did you hear about it? And there's just this real buzz in the population. They really want to move.
Pennsylvania had more Type B personalities than any other place in the world because they were creative people, and they, when you invent or improve a machine or a farm with new science, you are bringing into existence something that only was hinted at in your mind as a possibility. Mm-hmm. And this is an optimism that comes from the success of bringing creative things into being with the support of your nation when we had high tariffs and other things to back it up. So that's where this American Type B personality comes from, the thinking person who is not thinking because he's been programmed by some Harvard or Oxford, but because he's part of a successful thing to turn the lights on in the world.
Yeah, so Ian, you're still with us in Texas, right?
Yeah, I'm here for the moment. I'm going to have to get off soon. The place is really heating up.
Okay, that's what I was. So I just wanted to turn to you again. Were you able to hear what Tiffany and Tony just had to say? But, I mean, do you want to differentiate about Texas? I also know you've been organizing a lot in the famous healthcare complexes of Houston, one of the world-famous centers for medical education. But do you want to differentiate the population response?
One thing I find interesting is that the Hispanic population and the East Asian population still seems to need to get on board here, at least.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in San Francisco organizing at the medical center there and organizing here at the medical center, just the transformation of the people there who, when you're walking around, they generally tend to be in, I'm at work, I'm in the institution mode.
You talk about California now or Houston?
No, both.
Yeah. Both, okay.
And the transformation of the past month and a half has been profound, where at first people were saying, you know, good God, I can't talk to you about this. This is ridiculous, or worse, are now, I mean, Senator Hutchison of Texas just recently had a statement with the medical doctors in Houston going up and standing up against the policy change that's being pushed.
Mm-hmm.
And that came out of a result of a town hall meeting that we had here in Houston and at the medical center, and then just hitting it every day and just braving the the heat, braving the scorn that many people had at first. And what you've seen is just simply by being consistent and being straightforward and polemical with the truth, people, and then they see what's happening in the world around them. They always are going to say, okay, you know, I wouldn't want to stop and talk to you a few weeks ago, but somehow you keep saying things and they keep happening.
Tiffany, you want to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's definitely the case, you know, whereas back in May, I think it was May when we first came out with this pamphlet, it was new. You know, we resurfaced, like Anton was saying, we resurfaced a lot of documentation around these policymakers, and it was kind of new. But now you go to any of these town hall meetings or, you know, like you said, on Obama's weekly address or any time in the news you want to discuss the health care, this death board is brought up, the euthanasia is brought up, and it's really out there to the point where it's an unavoidable question. And, you know, it certainly generates a lot of response to the fact that we were out there saying at first, people know that, you know, it's not just like we want to raise, you know, pat ourselves on the back, yay, we were first, but the fact that LaRouche provided clear leadership and is, and it's not just, you know, but we're not just an anti-Obama or an anti-healthcare reform campaign, we're putting forward what the larger picture is and how to get out of it. So there's definitely a lot of response in the discussions on the level exactly where we wanted it to be, and it's continuing in that direction, you know, with the question of the economy in general.
Right. I'll just ask again, Ian, are you still there? Should we say goodbye and wish you the best?
Yeah, I can take one more question, but then I got to go.
Okay. Well, I was just going to – I didn't have anything that was drastically different. I just wanted to give you the opportunity if you wanted to cover any point that you hadn't already touched on.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess all I can really say is that as when I read the report from the Montana event that we had, it said at the end, P.S., send more literature.
That's Donald.
and that really is the case. You know, if we're – in order to be able to turn the tide on this, people have to support and contribute and finance this movement, because since it's so clear that we're the ones who called the shots on this and we're the ones who are out there with a policy that would actually work, people need to back us up and people need to come and support what we're doing, because it's very clear that we're the only ones who have a sense of what to do about this crisis. So, I mean, I would ask people to, if they're listening to this show, to call in and contribute and back us up.
Absolutely, and I'll give the phone numbers. And Ian, thank you very much. And you have a high old time there right now.
Okay. I'm going to go bonk some libertarians on the gold standard.
Okay. And thank you again, Ian. And the phone numbers, if you want to call, bye-bye.
Yeah.
Talk to you soon. For the LaRouche Political Action Committee, if you want to reach them by phone, you can call the toll-free number 800-929-7566. That's 800-929-7566. And I also recommend to people to have the EIR online, and of course that's where you're listening right now. Those are actively listening or listening on as it's archived, are on LaRouchePub.com. And to have the documentation, as Tiffany was just describing, to get that, you can also call toll-free 800-278-3135 to reach EIR, 800-278-3135. So one thing let me ask you, Tiffany, since you raised it about Chicago, because you were describing there's a certain character to the situation in Michigan. I'm sure Ohio has a kind of profile, but the city of Chicago, you implied you're spending quite a lot of time there right now. Is that the case?
Yeah, I've been in the Midwest a little over a month now, and I think I've spent, you know, over 50 to 60% of the time here.
Okay.
And so, it's a city that has sort of gone with the trend of the modern economy. It's not, as a whole, it's not quite as destitute as, you know, like the Detroit area, though you do see it if you go out in western or southern Chicago proper. You do definitely see signs of the collapse. One thing, though, that's funny about here is we came here, I think it was back in, you know, about the end of June. There was a big medical association conference here, and we were here. It's the, I think it was our first major presence here with the Obama Nazi healthcare plan, you know, big out in the open on the banner.
Oh, he spoke there. Is that where you were?
Yeah, I believe that he did speak. This is before I got out here. I believe he did speak.
American Medical Association, I think, of physicians.
Yeah, exactly. And so we were set up nearby with a huge banner with the Obama, you know, mustache picture and getting out literature. And, you know, it was very good. It was very, very much out there. And, you know, it was kind of the first time we had been here, and this is, you know, Obama's hometown. And so there were a lot of wild reactions. But what we found when we came back a month later, it was a lot more openness. A lot of people within a matter of weeks, three, mm-hmm. 4 weeks, were much more open, wanted to take literature, wanted to be in discussion, wanted to sign up and get memberships, and who were, you know, because the discussion on the healthcare reforms, the specifics had been coming out a little bit more, and people were concerned, and they had seen us, you know, a month ago, so there was a lot more openness, and you know, and now that we're back again, just a couple of weeks later, it'll be interesting to see, you know, if there's even more of a shift in that direction. I think there will be, but you know, this is Obama's hometown, and within a matter of weeks, he was much less popular. You know, as soon as more details were coming out, thanks to us pushing the discussion. So that's what I would say about Chicago.
That's good. Well, in the remaining minutes, let me ask you again, Tony. You just sketched, as you said, there's a timeline. It goes back decades to mm-hmm. in Britain and the British intervention in Germany to have this. And today, this whole business of health reform that Obama was quite happy to make the central issue of his entire administration is British imperial policy.
Yes, and people should be aware of a racial component to this whole situation, which is quite interesting because you have a lot of emphasis on Obama as a black or African American president. The fact is that the policy that he is promoting of killing off the elderly and the other vulnerable people, historically, this euthanasia policy comes directly from a British imperial movement which combines two different concepts. One of them is the concept of population control or population reduction associated with Malthus, the British economist who was an employee of the East India Company teaching in their college, who prescribed the method of apologizing for the British mass murder in India. That he said that the reason people died there is there were too many people living there, not because the British had caused famines by destroying agriculture. So that's Malthus, and that's the theory of it's natural to cut down populations by imperialism. The other side is called eugenics, which came out of British imperial circles in the late 19th century, founded by Sir Francis Galton and spread by imperial agencies that spread it into the United States and into Germany. Eugenics is the theory that certain people are better and more worthy of being preserved and to have children than certain other people.
In other words, you breed up the races.
You breed up the races. Okay. And you'll find that the theory of population control is always the way Hitler proposed it. That is, it's not simply to say everybody should stop having children. That's not what they mean. They mean that the wrong people shouldn't have children. The wrong races, the wrong families, the subjects of imperial control should be controlled in their population, whereas those who are the masters should have more children. And this is the combined movement of eugenics and euthanasia. If you have this background clearly in mind, you'll see that the program, the imperial program, that Obama, to his shame, a man who's whose grandfather was tortured by the British in Kenya, that he is promoting a system of death and destruction for the poorest and for those who are in racial minorities. And that is precisely what is on the agenda unless we block this thing.
Well, let me just underscore what everyone's been saying, too, by referring people to LaRouchePack.com, to the one of the latest feature, little LPAC feature videos. Sorry, Mr. President, the mass strike is on, because it shows the promise to succeed in what Tony just said, just described the stakes in. On the one hand, it's absolute kill-off of population deliberately towards doomsday. On the other hand, we get the opportunity to totally change history. Mr. LaRouche is not – it's just the intention of the empire, the British Empire enemy, to – suppress Mr. LaRouche is totally broken apart, so it's totally open. And let me ask you, Tiffany, in where you're organizing too, Mr. LaRouche has said, especially on healthcare in particular, it was actually 24 hours over Mr. Obama says, what else can I do? What else can I do except this British genocide policy? And LaRouche said, I'll tell you what to do. No HMOs. Intend to cover everyone. That should be done. Mobilize the resources. Build up the Hill-Burton system. Let me ask you, Tiffany, do you, on those particular things, do you run into people who express interest when you lay it out or raise certain things? Or especially the 60 to 70-year-olds say, I remember when we didn't have HMOs. What's it like? Anything in particular on that or the need for more hospitals instead of deciding who dies and doesn't get care?
Yeah, well, you know, I think a lot of people, anybody who has an HMO generally won't be too happy about the situation. And like you mentioned, if they're a little bit older, they're familiar with the Hill-Burton standard or the expansion of the healthcare infrastructure under FDR. Definitely have a sense that the problem today is this idea of a profit-driven healthcare system is just completely insane. It's anti-human and it's destroying people, and people are needlessly dying for lack of a healthcare system that actually functions. And you know, generally speaking, the approach I take and I find a lot of response to is if you have a lot of people who will say, you know, they want universal healthcare or Medicare for all or what, you know, depending on the group that they're with. And, you know, well, the question is, well, how do you provide something like that? You know, of course, everybody should have health care, but it's one thing to be for it. It's another thing to be, you know, with LaRouche and putting forward how you would actually physically provide that kind of situation. And sometimes, you know, it's funny. You ask someone, well, how are we going to do that? And they just kind of pause for a minute and not have much to say. So, you know, really organizing around the question that you actually need a direction for the economy. You need a certain level of productivity to even support these social programs like Medicaid or healthcare system in general. And there's definitely a lot of response to that, you know, unless someone is just really slimy or brainwashed by modern economics. It's a common sense concept, and, you know, definitely people are every day, you know, increasingly interested in what we're doing.
I'll just, as a sidelight, and we have a final thing I just want to ask Tony about, but in July, before Congress left, there was a little brainwashing. United Health Group, the biggest HMO in the United States, and its top vice president is from Britain and did the 1999 death panel there called NICE, National Institutes for Clinical Health and Clinical Excellence, Simon Stevens. They had a big mobile van parked out in front of Congress in Washington, full of how they can have distance medicine through electronic analysis. And just this kind of messing with people's brains for the gullible who can't put anything together. But in fact, as you say, if people are able to think, it's clear we should be building and providing and expanding resources and being human instead of these gimmicks and being patsies and fall guys for this crap. And let me just ask you, Tony, this is a counterpoint question. It's not long, but you have surveyed how much George Soros, the dirty money, the British channels are trying to activate in the country. They're not succeeding, but could you just say something about it in the final 60 seconds?
George Soros and his Open Society Institute and his personal checkbook has built an apparatus through the Tides Foundation and other instruments, creating groups and controlling groups like SEIU, Union, like ACORN, and so forth, which one of their movements today is called Healthcare for America Now, HCAN. And these movements were the instrument for Soros buying and controlling and giving the program to Obama in his candidacy, and now are the sole operation, and even inside the Democratic National Committee with somebody like Patrick Gaspar, the political director, from this Soros complex, they are running the troops on the ground that are being deployed on behalf of this crazy Soros euthanasia program. It is a very narrow and a very vulnerable thing that we have been able to trip up by activating the entire population.
Right, they're not getting anywhere. So no. We're just concluding, not because they have any power, they don't. But it's one more. It just points up the reality that the war has begun. We've won the ground in the initial battle here, and it's a personal victory for Mr. LaRouche, and we're going on for the whole shebang. So I want to thank our guests. I want to encourage everyone, call the LaRouche Political Action Committee if you want at 800-929-7566. Definitely subscribe and continue to EIR online, to EIR, where you're hearing us at LaRouchePub.com. And I want to thank Tiffany in Chicago, and she's often in Detroit, Tiffany Wamsley, Tony Chaikin here in our studio, and definitely stay tuned for August 22nd, again at 3 to 4 in the afternoon on The LaRouche Show, and for sure LaRouche's international webcast, September 8th, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on LaRouchePack.com. Thank you all. This is Marcia Mary Baker ending the show August 15th. 2009, The LaRouche Show. Thank you.